Leadership File on Premier.
Welcome to the Leadership File, bringing you conversations with leaders and experts on leadership themes to help you lead your life well and enable others to flourish. I'm Andy Peck, your host. And this week I welcome a friend from over 38 years. His name is Jonathan Tame. We were fellow students at Y College, London University, which later we went on our separate ways and able to be back in touch through a mutual friend more recently. Jonathan is the director of the Jubilee Centre since January 2012, after working for 2 years with Jubilee Centre's sister organisation, Relational Research. Before that, he spent 11 years in Romania, 8 in Switzerland, leading community development and cultural engagement projects with youth with a mission. He holds a master's degree in agricultural economics. His wife, Helen, is a community chaplain, and they have 5 children. So this week, we're going to be looking at the intergenerational nature of God's purposes. So welcome, Jonathan, back to the Leadership File.
Thank you very much, Andy. Good to be here.
And good to be resuming contact again. Before we look at intergenerational nature of God's purposes, of course, Jubilee Centre will be known to some, but not to all. So I'm sure you've got your elevator pitch, as they say, in terms of your short pithy explanation of what you do.
Yeah, well, we are just reworking that as we speak. So yes, I mean, our goal is, we're saying we're helping intellectually curious Christians connect their faith with public life. I mean, that's the short sort of statement.
That's brilliant.
And we do that by working through tackling issues, economic, social, political issues that are in the news, in the media, and trying to think through those from a specifically biblical perspective, so we know how we're to be salt and light with regard to those issues, you know, as God's people. So, we just try and resource as many believers as possible who are interested in this through a wide range of resources on our website and through training programs and events and so on.
Fabulous, good. And obviously, people can take a trip to your site, and I understand you're, you know, in the process of revamping things a little bit, so that'll be, you know, it'll be up and new and running in the next few months. So
exactly, a brand new website, and lots of goodies,
good stuff. So so let's talk about intergenerational nature of God's purposes, as obviously we're reflecting on leadership and the leadership element of that as well, and it's something you've been considering at Jubilee. So tell us a little bit about your recent history in terms of your thoughts on this topic.
Well, there's a number of ways of that this kind of crops up. In part, it's the fact that our organization has been around since 1983. And the founder, who's not directly involved in the work anymore, but he's still very active, someone called Michael Schluter. I mean, he's in his 70s now. And we're wanting continually to reach each new generation of Christian graduates, leaders in the workplace and in the church. And so we are constantly thinking, just within our organization, how can we continue to adapt our message, our communication of the biblical vision for society down through each generation? It was forged really in the 1980s around things like the Keep Sunday Special campaign. And it's extraordinary how much the language and the culture has changed over the last sort of 30, 40 years. So just reflecting on it, we're quite blessed to have in our team here people born in, each person's born in a different decade, which is fascinating. So the founder, he was born in the 1940s. Our finance manager, he was born in the 50s. I was born in the 60s. Our training director, born in the 70s. Our support relations person, born in the 80s, and our communications manager in the 90s. So got this wonderful intergenerational team, not intentionally, but I think there's something delightful about that, because it makes us continue to, and as we're such a small team, we're very flat, we're not very hierarchical, we're sort of a flat structure. And so we listen to each other, we learn, and we keep saying, well, what is your perspective? You know, where does your generation, how does your generation think about these issues, or what kind of language or preoccupations have you got? And I think it's very healthy to try and incorporate the views across different generations within an organization. And I think that the same goes for the church, same goes for, obviously, for family. Families are, by definition, intergenerational, but we so often see whenever there's a breakdown in generational relationships, things tend to go wrong. We've been thinking a little bit about some of these issues that we may look at a little bit down the road. One is knife crime, which is obviously a really big thing in the last couple of years. And one of the key causes or contributory factors of knife crime appears to be a fatherlessness. So kids who've grown up without an effective father figure or their own father in their lives, they've ended up in gangs, and the gang culture leads often to the carrying and using of knives. Another example is the challenge of old age care. Social care is becoming more and more difficult to fund, and the demands on the NHS and particularly providing care for people at the end of their lives in their old age is a huge challenge. And often family members are too far away to participate and be involved in that. And so we've got a real challenge around how can we see, if you like, the extended family try to pull back in around this question of old age care. That's one of the areas we want to look at in more detail.
And obviously, within the media, the disparity of views between, quotes, the young and the old was brought into sharp focus in recent political life. Obviously, we're going back a little while for the Brexit vote, where it was classically believed that, and I think the stats bore this out, that the older generation typically wanted to leave, the younger generation typically wanted to remain. And there seems to be, you know, something of a fracture within our society. Has tended to be a little bit. I've heard younger people moan about the older generation for that reason.
Yeah, and I think that is also another major issue which we deal with regularly, is that of debt, and particularly national debt, government debt, and as well as personal debt. And when you see the government borrowing at such high levels over so many years, effectively what they're doing is they are putting the burden of repayment on future generations who've had absolutely no say in that. They're going to be landed that these very high burdens of debt, and that clearly is a breakdown. Now, of course, different generations are going to think differently about things, and you would expect them to. You know, Winston Churchill is supposed to have famously said, you know, if anyone under 30 who is not a liberal has no heart, and anyone over 30 who is not conservative has no head. typical Churchillian quotation, or at least attributed. So, I mean, you know, the younger people are moved more, if you like, by their heart. And as you get older, you know what's practical, what's reasonable, what can be done, and you tend to lose some of your idealism and become a bit more pragmatic. And of course, the key question is how do you make those different views, bring them together in a constructive way, as opposed to pitching generations against each other? And that is, I think, a huge problem when we start to talk about, and as has come out in the whole Brexit debate, you start to say, oh, older people are the problem because they voted to leave, and we younger people, you know, we want to remain, and so on. That's another example of where, if you like, the intergenerational relationship is failing. And when it does fail, I think it leads to a lot of problems.
Yeah. So we're coming to a break in a minute, Jonathan, but you bring obviously an international perspective personally in terms of having lived in Africa, Romania, Switzerland, with perhaps potentially different views of how generations function, perhaps.
Yeah. Oh, it's so enriching to be able to live in other cultures, because if you like, the education that brings you about your own culture and also the learning from other cultures is fantastic. So you know, a couple of examples that I talk about a lot. I remember in Switzerland when I lived there in the early 90s at first, there were, the motorway was being, you know, built into a new, across a new part of Switzerland, and then the motorway signs above the roads, there was this huge sign, but only a quarter of it had any, you know, that was painted. The rest of it was blank. And I used to keep thinking, why is there this, you know, the great big sign and only a quarter of it used? Well, when I went back to live in Switzerland after 11 years in Romania, they had built the extra bit of the motorway, and so there were more junctions which weren't there in the early 90s. And simply what they did was that when the rest of the motorway was built, the new junctions were opened, they simply uncovered what they had painted there 15 or 20 years earlier, and it was ready there to use. Now, I thought that's an example of long-range thinking or long-term thinking, which is, in parallel to intergenerational thinking. But it does show how, in Switzerland certainly, they think in the long term. They have 100-year mortgages, I think, even to this day.
Right.
Which obviously have to be paid off by different generations, not just one generation. And I think that long-term anticipation, long-term planning, saving money now by, or saving money in the future by making some, doing something efficiently in anticipation for that, is a real valuable lesson.
Yeah. Well, you're listening to Leadership File with me, Andy Peck, and I'm joined this week by Jonathan Tay. Jonathan is the director of the Jubilee Centre, and we'll be back just after this. Welcome back to Leadership File with me, Andy Peck. I'm joined this week by my friend, Jonathan Tame. He's the director of the Jubilee Centre. We were talking before the break a little of our topic this week, which is intergenerational nature of God's purposes and how that works out in terms of leadership. And Jonathan was sharing a little bit of having lived in different parts of the world, including Switzerland. Jonathan, I guess the African kind of approach to the intergenerational life is often deemed so different to the Western world. Would that be something you'd agree?
Yes, it is. Really, there is. It is much more hierarchical and patriarchal in Africa. Okay, I lived there. It was back in the 80s when I was living in Cameroon. But I also have a colleague, one of our training director here. He grew up in India. And he said it's similar there, that the older generation, you would never challenge, as a younger person, you'd never challenge the view or the decision of an older person. There's much more of a deference there for the old. And I think that cuts both ways. Of course, that leads to a real respect for older people. But on the negative side, it tends to shut down the new ideas and the better way of thinking that younger people can bring. And of course, you see, there's this is all being is played out as well in the scriptures for us. You see where, the title of this discussion we thought was around the intergenerational purposes of God, and that is, you see this through the Old Testament where God works. He has a set goal that, for the people of Israel are going to be a light to the nations and so on, and you see generation after generation, you sometimes get several generations where they completely fail and blow it, but God doesn't change his purpose. The purpose remains the same, and then you see a renewal and restoration, and you see a new king come back, for example, come in who listened to God's ways and wanted to follow and walk in God's ways and brought the nation along with them. But you see also the failure where you see a breakdown of that intergenerational relationship. And, I mean, a great example is of Rehoboam, the king, who was the son of Solomon, grandson of King David. And when Rehoboam became king, his father Solomon had these conscripted laborers, sort of forced laborers, and they wanted a better deal, and they came to the king and to Rehoboam, and young Rehoboam, he asked for the advice of his of the elders who served his father, and they said, yeah, you need to listen and heed, you know, be generous towards these people. But then the youngsters that he had grown up with, Rehoboam had grown up with, said, no, you show yourself to be even tougher than your dad. And of course, you know, he wasn't, and he failed. And it led to the split between Israel and Judah. You know, the 10 tribes went off by themselves. So that came about through this intergenerational breakdown, a failure of continuity there. So I think there are lots of examples in the scripture where we see, if you like, the passing on of the baton, not just, as I say, literally through generations, but within a family, but also different generations, say, within the church. You know, the classic text, you know, that many Bible schools have of, isn't it, 2 Timothy 2:2, you know, in what you've heard and received from me, you know, pass on to others. This whole idea of continuity is a very deep and rich biblical principle, and I think that's one that we need to be paying a lot more attention to.
And Judaism as a whole, or at least the Jewish nation, has classically been a from its, obviously, its whole Testament roots and its teaching has obviously imbibed some of this intergenerational nature of living.
Well, big time, because, and right from, you know, Deuteronomy, as Moses is giving them the law, he says, right, you must teach this to your children. You must pass it on, fathers especially, pass this on. Tell the next generation, your children and their children, what the Lord has done. This requirement, in a sense, to maintain the faith at first. And then it came out, it comes into their view of the economy as well. So within typical Jewish families, the older generation would save up so that when their children would want to start a business, typically there would be capital that had already been saved for them. So they would pass on to their children the capital needed for them to start up their small business. And so they never really lacked. The Jewish diaspora, right all the way through sort of centuries in Europe, they hardly ever had to borrow from other nations. They were able to maintain and have the capital they needed to sustain themselves. I think just the very fact there's no other nation that has managed to stay intact, no other people group, down through centuries and centuries without their own land, other than Jewish people. And it can only be because they were, some would say it's because of God's faithfulness, but yes, in part it was, but it was also because of these practices that they thought intergenerationally. They ensured that the next generation would not only grow in faith and inherit their faith, but they'd also inherit what they needed economically and in terms of family and culture in order to survive.
Yeah. Well, thank you. No, it's really, really helpful. So when it comes to this intergenerational question, Jonathan, and your kind of thinking and work on it, have you come to any conclusions? Are you still at the kind of question asking stage? What's the kind of next stage for you in your thinking?
Well, at the heart of Jubilee Centre's work, as we try and think how to apply the Bible into public life, relationships are absolutely at the heart of that. Good, strong, just, thriving relationships are, you know, God's will for us. You know, that's why he said, you know, love God with all your heart, love your neighbour as yourselves. So I think one of the, you know, there's no kind of magic bullet for solving all intergenerational problems. But clearly, we need, I think, to be find ways of respecting and valuing each generation's contribution. You know, there is a real problem in the culture of ageism, where we discount people because of their age. When we're a very visual culture more and more, where youth and beauty is prized above all other qualities. You know, as you get older, you know, you are deemed somehow to be a bit less valuable or less of a contribution to make. But the reality is, of course, that older people have accumulated far more lessons in the school of life, will have, as a whole, more wisdom, more experience, more understanding. And I think being able to build and encourage these constructive relationships between the generations, being able to listen to one another, I think is crucial. And I think we should particularly be doing that in churches, make sure, for example, that we don't only have sort of age-segregated small groups, for example. We should try and be sure to practice this opportunity of in our small groups to have people from different ages. And those, a bit like you know, any person moderating a small group needs to make sure that each person is able to have a voice and contribute. That must especially be true so that each generation has a voice. Each one is is listened to because each generation has a contribution to make. So I'd love to see more of the church taking a lead in this and being able to model good intergenerational relationships, not just sitting around studying the Bible, but also as we look at some of the wider social and economic challenges that we face.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you. And it might be worth, as we close, Jonathan, just mentioning that, you know, that as a charity, you provide resources for, you know, leaders, and many of whom will be intellectually curious, as you mentioned at the very start of the show.
And
the Cambridge paper would be one that I think many would be aware of, but not all. So talk a little bit about the Cambridge paper just in a few seconds as we close.
What, about Cambridge papers generally?
Well, just in terms of how people can access them. And
Exactly, yes. Now, we have been producing these every quarter. It's around a 4,000-word kind of essay on a particular topic or issue. And we publish them both in printed form and they're online as PDFs on our website. Come out every quarter. So the last few ones, for example, we have looked at the transhumanist movement, sort of technologies and transhumanism. We've looked at the whole thing of sport, such a central place in our culture. How can we see redemption coming through sport? We've looked at social welfare recently. We've looked at gender. Where next? The whole transgender challenge. Time for a financial reformation. I'm just looking at some of the titles. Mm. So these papers are a great resource. A lot of church leaders value them because what we try and do is to set out an overview of the topic or the issue, how it's played out in public life right now, and then we dig into the scriptures and say, right now, how do we think biblically around this and then respond? What kind of response can we make as believers and as leaders to these issues? So I'd welcome people to have a look, look up Cambridge Papers. Our website is jubilee-centre.org, and then you can search for Cambridge Papers on there and you'll see them all. So I'd be delighted to engage with anyone who wants to write to us and ask more, find out more, but certainly browse our website. There's lots of resources there.
Fabulous. Thank you. Well, bless you. Thank you. It's been fascinating to chat about this topic, which is not something that necessarily people would necessarily think is at the forefront of their mind, but actually when we think about it, it does affect and everything in terms of how churches function and how society functions. So thank you so much.
Yeah. Brilliant. Thanks, Andy.
So you've been listening to The Leadership File with me, Andy Peck, joined this week by Jonathan Tame, who's the director of a Jubilee Centre. So do as Jonathan encouraged you, to go to their website, find out their resources. Particularly, I would commend the Cambridge papers that have certainly helped me down through the years get a grip of topics that perhaps I wouldn't exactly know exactly what to think about biblically, but I've been helped by the authors who are often steeped in scripture and also the world of the particular topic that they are encountering. So this is Andy Peck. Thank you for joining us. Check out the podcast online on Premier Radio, iTunes or Podbean. And may God help you as you seek to lead in his name. And as we close, the words of the Apostle Paul to the Corinthian church, and God is able to bless you abundantly so that in all things, at all times, having all that you need, you will abound in every good work. Bye for now.
You've been listening to The Leadership File on Premier. Andy Peck serves as a tutor at CWR, a Christian charity whose courses and publications aim to apply God's word to everyday life. Contact him via email apeck@cwr.org.uk.